Got it.
I'm Liza.
I'm Riss.
And this is the Little Sleep
Much Reading Podcast.
And finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind. Random, but if you're listening to this on Spotify, give us 5 stars right now before you forget.
Right now.
Right now. I always go to look at how many 5-star reviews we have, and we have more than you would think, but not as many as we deserve.
Ooh, really? I didn't know we have any.
We have like 13 5-star reviews.
Whoa, that's cool.
I know. Proud of us for that.
Well, we want more.
You want more? Yeah, 13, 5.0. So go give it another one, please. This week, we read. We read gothic fiction. I got like nervous for a second because I was like, I thought we had switched gothic and serial, but then I didn't know if we actually did. And I was like, did I read the wrong book?
No.
We didn't.
We switched.
Did your serial book come in the mail?
It did. It came on Friday instead of Sunday, which is really cool.
It came to your house or it came to Barnes and Noble?
I had to order it to my house because it was a print on demand.
Oh, wait, is
Yeah.
POD?
Yes,
That's
because
kind of.
it's, yeah. So I didn't get a discount on it.
Shocked by that.
And I would have just had like my manager order it because sometimes she can order me print on demand books and then like they come right to the store and it's
Right.
easier. But she wasn't in, so I was like, whatever, I'll just be a big girl.
Is the first one POD?
Yeah.
Weird.
And I was selling it in store. Like I got them to order me cases of it. And I was selling cases of it faced out in section with the shelf talker. And then they were like, no more print on demand books.
Those bitches.
So now I can't get it in anymore. So it's not selling.
I'm surprised, very surprised that it's a POD book and it got as popular as it did on TikTok.
So is Playground.
Oh, is it really?
Yep. Erin Beauregard, Christopher Triana, they're all like independently published or Amazon exclusively published.
Where are people finding this shit? You know what I mean?
I couldn't tell you. There's another one too, who I can't think of his name right now, but he's also POD.
And it used to be so strange because you would know when something was trending on TikTok because many people would come in requesting the same book. And you'd be sitting there like, what is going on? And a few times while I still worked there, it would be books that either were POD or didn't even come up in the system at all. And like, where did you? Like, there was one book called The Mountain Is You, I think it was called. And I had,
Yeah, I know what you're talking
you know what I mean? I had people
about.
ask every day, and I don't think Barnes and Noble had any access to it, even POD.
So recently the regional manager of my store, he reads horror. And he like sent an email to all the managers and everything and was like, I want this book on everyone's radar. It's so good, blah, 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 blah. And it's Winterset Hollow.
No
And so
shit.
my manager pulled me aside and was like, and it's a print on demand. And she was like, we have to get this book in. Heath wants us to sell it. It's got to be like faced out, whatever. And I was like, oh, I read this book. It's great. And she was like, what do you mean you've read it? And I was like, I read this book like 2 years ago.
Literally,
It's
because
technically in sci-fi, it's technically in fantasy, but I'm like, it should be in horror. It's only in fantasy because the animals be talking.
the animals be talking, and that was so cool because he emailed us, right? And was like, "You want to read this?" And we were like, oh, "Yeah."
I low key want to reach out to him and be like, hey, my dude, I'm a bookseller and everyone's hype, like getting so hype over your book right now.
Yeah, you should.
Feel like he'll like that.
He'll love it. Wow, that's what a small world too, you know?
I really, if we get in like a case of it, which I don't know if we'll be able to because it's a print on demand, I like kind of want to push it for book club and make book club read it.
You should.
But they never pick what I want them to pick.
You like offer them options and then they decide.
Yeah.
What is it for this coming session?
Where He Can't Find You. It's a Darcy Coates book. Never read anything Darcy Coates. This one's a YA Darcy Coates book, but
Interesting.
apparently it's very graphic and it's only YA because the characters are teenagers.
Fun. And what was the last book?
The last book was Never Whistle at Night.
Period. And we love it.
Mixed reviews.
Racism.
Book club said it wasn't scary enough.
Come on, book club.
But like I feel like a lot of them don't read horror, so they're expecting like something shocking and dramatic and crazy like a horror movie, and that's just not how horror works. That's not how horror books really work.
No. It's not. It's not. And it shouldn't be. All the time, you know?
No, yeah.
What a bummer. What a letdown.
Yeah. They're like, we've never read anything scary in book club. And I'm like, aren't you guys horrified?
You
Aren't
should
you guys horrified all the time?
give them something just so bizarre. Like even the book I read this week that is just so gross, but like so weird. Like not like playground gross, like gross like brother, ew. And then they'd be like, I don't like this. And you'd be like, you said you wanted something scary.
Right.
Take it.
I thought about trying to order 10 of Fever Dream and having them read that.
Yes.
But I was like, I'll be so mad if I do that. And they're like, it's just not scary enough. Guys, it's Fever
Fine.
Dream. What do you mean?
Over the summer, they won't find it scary, but you should just make them read Horns.
It's too long.
It's too long.
They're very specific. I feel like they like short books like us.
Oh, and that's fair.
We can't fault them for it.
No, no, no. Horns doesn't even feel long though, because you just start reading it and then you go nuts. You go nuts with it.
And again, I've never read a book that feels so summer.
It's so summer. Like, I want to read it again this summer.
It's so sticky heat summer.
It's so, ooh, I hate it, but I love
So good.
it.
We
What is
love that stupid book.
we love that stupid book, we love that stupid man. Joe,
Joe, if you're listening,
if you're listening to the Little Sleep Much Reading podcast,
write something else,
yeah,
please, soon.
period. We need it. What did you read this week?
I read What Feasts at Night by T. Kingfisher, which is the second book to What Moves the Dead. I don't want to say it's a sequel because I feel like you can read them alone.
But can I see the cover? A horse.
A horse.
It's reminiscent of the cover of What Moves the Dead.
It is. That's if you could see that one.
The rabbit.
The little rabbit, and he's all like mushroom infected. And then this is the horse, and he's hanging.
Is there a horse in the book?
Absolutely, there is.
Yay. I read Where I End by Sophie White. And I don't know what the cover even is, but it's kind of cool.
Coal.
Oh, yeah. Or water.
Oh, it could be water.
There is a lot of water in the book.
It must be water. It kind of looks like water.
Looks, yeah, like droplets of water, kind of. Or like someone jumping into the sea and, the little like bubbles that form.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk before we get into our reviews about like how do you define gothic?
Why do I feel like we've had this conversation?
We did last week, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But now that we're in the episode, I want to bring it back.
My brain always goes to like a dark, like it's nighttime outside and I see a castle with a gargoyle on it. That's always my first like picture in my head.
Yeah.
But I don't like, I feel like gothic is a vibe.
Yes.
Because my book is definitely gothic, but my book didn't have no castle or no gargoyle in it.
And neither did mine.
It's just very like, almost like melancholic in a way.
Yes. And I think we brought this up last week because I was telling you how, like, one of my friends was like, I was like, oh my God, this book, not this book, even though this book was also very scary. I was like, oh, the book I just read was so gory. I wasn't expecting that. And she was like, well, that's stupid that you weren't expecting that because it literally says gothic in the title. And I was like, gothic has nothing to do with something being gross and scary. It's, I don't know about you, but I have come to understand gothic as the abstract concept of a haunting. So there doesn't have to actually be ghosts, but someone or something is haunting the narrative.
That's perfect, actually.
And I don't know about you, but like there is no ghost in mine, but it is a haunting, like something, there is a haunting. It's not paranormal.
According to the Google machine, the dictionary website, what is the true meaning of Gothic? Of or relating to a style of fiction characterized by the use of desolate or remote settings and macabre, mysterious, or violent incidents.
That's honestly a pretty good definition of it.
I like what you were saying about their. About, something haunting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that also puts a really good, not spin on it, that also gives good insight into like some of our classics that we consider gothic.
Yes.
Like Frankenstein is not scary because of Frankenstein.
No.
I mean, like, of course it is. Like, there's a monster that was created from the parts of other people. Like, yeah, sure, that's terrifying and gross and gory. And he's got big black eyes. But the thing that's scary about Frankenstein is like the rejection of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I often think of As I Lay Dying by William Faulkner as specifically Southern Gothic. And again, we do have a corpse, but it's not a paranormal haunting that's occurring. It's very human haunting. So I feel like often people think of like Dracula as being like a blueprint for Gothic because it's in the castle with the gargoyles, like you say. But so many other types of books can elicit almost a more Gothic, like Beloved is Gothic.
You said just said the name Beloved, and I got full
You
chills
got
on my arms.
every Toni Morrison is gothic, I think. I think The Bluest Eye is gothic. I think Sula is gothic. But yeah, it's just, it's interesting to think about. And I'd wanted to bring it up because I feel like there is like a sort of rigid understanding of what gothic is. And I want people to know that it's a much wider genre than it may first appear.
And also, I mean, to go back to Dracula, Dracula is a haunting.
Yeah.
The man cannot die.
Right.
Like, he's alive forever. That's terrifying. Like, that's not a fun time.
That's what's scary about it. That's what's scary about vampires in general. Like, Interview with the Vampire is another example. You could do Fledgling, maybe even as an example of gothic.
I feel like vampires and ghosts are very close related. Like, they are, in a way, vampires are ghosts in a way. Like, they are haunting creatures. They can never leave.
Can never leave. And that ties back to the conversation we have again and again about Matheson. Are they zombies or are they vampires? It's like, a zombie is a vampire is a ghost. It's all the same thing when you really think about it.
Which is sad.
And it's sad. And it's also, that's why it's scary. Like, I think all three of those figures are abject because they are undead in different ways, but they all threaten what we think is natural, which is that you die and you go to heaven or something like that. That's what
you get buried in the ground,
right?
You know,
and then they
you
all
get to
say,
rest.
No rest for them.
And also, I mean, specifically with like zombies, to come face to face with yourself decaying,
hideous.
I guess you can even say that for like a vampire.
Yeah.
To become face to face with like the coldest version of yourself.
Right.
Sad.
And what is worse, being a zombie and decaying or being a vampire and never aging?
Right.
Like, I always think of in Fledgling, like how she's like a little girl, basically. But her brain is not.
In Fledgling, they do age. It's just at a different rate than humans, I guess. But yeah, she's still a child. And again, like, mentally, they consider her to be an adult.
Right.
But her body doesn't reflect that yet. I'm pretty sure they still grow. I don't know. I DNF'd that book.
I know you did.
I was triggered. I said, this is...
We said no more of the pedophilic vampires on Maine.
No, thank you.
Before we get into the reviews also, I just want to tell you something gross that I saw a TikTok about, and it was about zombies, and it was like, if the zombies are eating, are they defecating? Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that gross?
Yeah.
But it's so true.
Yeah.
And that plays into the idea of the abject, I think, even more, because like Kruschева writes about how a corpse is the most abject something can be, but also like bodily fluids are abject because there's something that has been expelled from the body and are no longer part of the body. And so if you imagine all the zombies and all those zombies movies are just running around like covered in shit, that makes it so much worse.
It does.
And that spooked me. Do you hear the dogs barking?
No, for why?
I think their dog walker is here.
Fancy.
I know, they're so fancy with their little dog walker. They love it.
Wow, so New York City would be smelly.
Yeah, brother. Yeah, brother. I in the same video, it was somebody talking about how, like, I don't know why they thought this, but it still kind of freaked me out. And it was like a lot of people who would succumb to the virus at first would be like in their own homes or in hospitals. So a lot of the zombies running around would be like in their pajamas or in hospital gowns or naked. Because you do always see them in street clothes in the movies and stuff. And you're kind of like, I guess, but like, I don't know where his logic came from because you have to get bit by a zombie. So unless the zombie
Depends.
broke it, oh, I guess so. Sometimes it's like airborne, right? So yeah, I'm not sure. But that kind of spooked me a little too.
Yeah, I think it would definitely depend on, you know, the virus and all that.
Zombies in their PJs.
Poor little things. Just poop in their pants.
Just poop in their pants. PJs. Like, I feel bad.
Covered in blood, in guts,
There's the
in
poor
poop.
things. Put them out of their damn misery.
I
Anyway.
always think about, like, what if they, like, because they're eating you, so what if they eat, like, your intestines and it has, like, poop in
Yeah, it definitely does.
it? Then they're eating poop too.
They're eating it. They're gross. Also, was it in, did we find out in The Last of Us that their brain is still into, like, they can still think their thoughts, but they can't control their actions?
I don't know, I didn't finish it.
Oh, I think that's what you end up finding out. And that makes me so sad.
That is sad, but that is how a fungus would work.
Exactly. Oh, speaking of fucking fungus, you want to tell us about your book?
Yeah, but this one don't have no fungus in it.
Why not?
Because it did something else. It's pretty cool.
Let's hear it.
So yeah, I read What Feasts at Night. If you remember, I read What Moves the Dead, I don't know, like a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe. Loved it. Fungal horror, which is pretty cool. Super creepy, super crazy. It's now out in paperback, even though it took 3 years for them to do that. And let's talk about it. You know what? I realized I used my book club book and I didn't do a rating scale, so let me look at the rating scale so I can do it while I talk to you about it. But pretty much this follows the same main character, Easton, who is going on, who just really wants a goddamn holiday and can't friggin' get one, okay? And so Easton goes back to Galatia, which is like their hometown. Also, they don't use they them. They have their like their own pronouns. I think it's like Ka and Khan, I think. So T. Kingfisher like made just this like beautiful and very like gothic scene because Galatia is just like, you know that scene in Beauty and the Beast when Belle is like on the horse walking through the forest and it's like dark and cold and the trees feel like they're curving in. T. Kingfisher very much created that. She created this beautiful language. It's not beautiful actually. This language that the Galatian people speak, and it's supposed to be quite ugly on the tongue. But it's like she created this place that's like desolate and very like small town feeling. They have bad liquor, they have like bad food, they're always in a war. Like she's created a very interesting place of her own. I want to read. Okay. All right, first. So yeah, Easton is back in Galatia, and they're at a hunting lodge that their family owns. The caretaker that they had been paying is now gone and dead, and it seems like no one in town will take the new job as caretaker, except for this really grumpy lady who's very, very poor. And there's a rumor around the town that the old caretaker didn't just die from, a normal cold or a normal like lung infection. They think it was something more. And maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I can't tell you. So I think I'm going to read this one little paragraph. Autumn was nearly spent, which meant that many of the trees had lost their leaves. You might think that would mean that the woods had opened up, but if you think that, you have likely never been to Galatia. Serrated ranks of pine lined the road, with the bare branches of oaks thrusting out between them like arthritic fingers. The sky was the color of a lead slug and seemed barely higher than the trees themselves. Combined with the wagon ruts that left a ridge down the center of the road, I had the unpleasant feeling that I was riding straight down a giant throat. So friggin' delicious. I love that. So good. So yeah. So Easton is returning home and things are maybe not as they seem. For readability and interest, I gave it a 8. I think the writing in here is really beautiful and the story's fun. I really like I think she's calling this series the Scorned Soldier series, I believe is what she's calling it. And I think it's gonna be a trilogy. I'm not positive. So I really enjoy this series. I enjoy Easton as a character. I enjoy, the rules that T. Kingfisher has created with Galatia and this place, and like the different pronouns for different people. Soldiers are different. The priests are different. I don't remember where my train of thought was. Something about they have these really weird. Can't remember.
I feel like you were talking about the world building and how like everybody and their different roles and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I think you were going somewhere in that direction. Like the soldiers and like
Yeah, I don't remember. It's gone. But I think it's cool that she's created this world with all these rules that feel very real, but like it's definitely set in our world. I'm pretty sure the what moves the dead took place somewhere in Britain. And I know, like, between the very short period between What Moves the Dead and What Feasts at Night, Easton was in Paris. So there's definitely, I think it's definitely interesting that she can create this whole thing in this, in these parameters that are still our world. It makes it creepier. And I really like that. And also, it's just like a good. I love a short little book. I just love how short this book is. I think it's like the perfect bite-sized story. It's the perfect snack. And again, it's like always a good story. It's always good writing. It's like a good snack, and you know it's gonna be satisfying. For language and style, I'm also gonna give it an 8. Like I said, like I think the writing is amazing. I think the world building's amazing. I think the plot was really fun. But also, like, T. Kingfisher is a seasoned writer. I would really hope. And I know, like, everyone has their preferences, but I don't think you have to really worry about, like, language and style when it comes to, like, a seasoned writer. You know what I mean? Capital W. Form, I didn't do nothing. Shelf-worthy read again. I also gave it an 8 because I feel like this book, especially if you read the first one, I think you'd like it. I also think that this book doesn't have to be read. After the first one, I think technically they can be read as independent things. There are some references to the first one. You might be like a little confused on some of the characters, but for the most part, you have a whole new cast of characters. And all of the characters really stay true to who they are in the first one. And so I feel like not much explanation is needed for them. Slay. For plot, I'm gonna give it an 8. I love 8s across the board. I love the plot. Like I said, we're taking a step away from the fungal horror and we're moving into a legend. I think it's called the moral, MOROI. Don't know how to say it, but we're definitely stepping into like a haunting, ghostly type story. And it's again, like I said, different horror from the first one, but it's on to the same kind of like mystery feeling, the same. It doesn't like lose its integrity in horror, I think. Even though we've like jumped into something new, there was never a point where I was like, yeah, right, like first this person's dealing with the fungal horror and now we're on to no, like I never felt like that. I was just like, of course this would be happening. And it really made sense. And there's also like a lot of like little superstition things in here that I'm like, oh yeah, that would be in a small town, a small like isolated country like this, in a small town like this. Like I feel like there was one point where the new caretaker was like making the cat's cradles and like hanging them from the antlers of like the dead animals in the hunting lodge. There was one point where they were putting like steel under their pillows to ward things off. There was like a lot of superstition that was going into this one, which was kind of fun and interesting. I just want to talk about like there's a big thing. I feel like T. Kingfisher is really good at picking one big theme. No, that's not the right word. One big concrete image to kind of pull you into the scene. With the first one, she had the rabbits, which were so haunting and so creepy and so bizarre. And even though, like, that wasn't the main focus of what was happening, it tied into it, and it was the perfect image to put, like, on the cover of the book, in the, what are they called, the end pages, you know, like, to really, like, anchor you in with a creepy image. And in this book, she does something similar. She kind of anchors you in with moths. And I just feel like there's a lot of, you know how there's like some experiences that you have as a kid that you're like, surely I am the only person to have ever experienced that in my life. Do you ever, have you ever touched a moth? You've never touched a moth? Okay. Well, I've touched a moth.
They're scary, Marissa. I'm not touching that shit.
I've touched a moth. Even like the little tiny white ones.
Ew.
I've picked one up by the wings.
You're such a bug kid.
I was a bug kid.
I was not a bug kid. Carry on. Hence, yes.
Because Liza doesn't know, when you pick up a moth or even like a butterfly, if you touch a butterfly's wing, you get like the powdery residue on your hands from their wings. And it's almost like they, it's almost like their wings kind of like flake away in a weird way. I don't know how to explain it, okay, but it's a thing. And there's a beautiful dream sequence in here where Easton is like touching things and they're like powdering away and flaking away the way that a moth's wing would. So good. Had me on the floor. So good. Another thing I want to talk about, because I think this is like a huge part of the plot, is there's a lot of dream sequences in here, and there's one very long one where like the climax of the book kind of takes place. And I feel like a lot of times, especially in horror, like a dream sequence is almost like a cop out. You know, you can't like of like anything can happen in a dream. So of course, like we love to have our dreams in our stories and write about them, but it comes to a point where I'm like, the big bang has to happen separately from the dream. Because if it doesn't, then you're just having a, and then I woke up moment, which is like stupid. It's just, it's gimmicky at this point. So I feel like, but with this book, I think that she did a lot to make her dream sequences valid and able to be such a huge part of the plot. And yeah, I think that's really amazing. For characters, I'm going to give it a 9, mainly because I think that Easton is amazingly, I just love Easton. I think that they're a great character. And I think that the other characters in here are also quite engaging. They're all very different. They're not exactly likable, and I think that that's how you make a good, realistic character. But with that, I want to talk a little bit about how, like, Easton goes by Ka and Khan because they fought in the war. They're a soldier, or were a soldier. And because of that, I think that Easton doesn't exactly have PTSD, but there's definitely like some of the war lingers on. And there's this like beautiful part, and I can't find it in my book, and I should have wrote it down, but I didn't. Where T. Kingfisher says, like, people think that the war is like an event. It's something that happened, which it is, but it's also not. The war is a place. So, like, I'm a citizen of Galatia, but I'm also a citizen of war. And it's a place where you learn a whole new, like, pattern and a whole new language. And it's interesting because in the beginning of the book, Easton's talking about how they're in Paris and they had this routine. You know, they get coffee in the morning. They do everything like the same every day. This happens at this time, blah, 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 blah. And I think that's such an interesting parallel to like this like idea of war being a place. And Easton even talks about like if they're dreaming about the war, that doesn't mean that they're like in the middle of gunfire and everything. They could just be like walking around with their friend and they're in the war. And I thought that's interesting. You know, you have to f like almost change your way of being. You learn a completely different way to be, a different way to talk to people, a different way to look around you, to look at things, to measure time, to measure safety. Like your routine is so different. I just feel like it was such a good way to be like, yes, war is an event, but war is also a place that I will now always be in. Like I'm always a part of that place now. And I think that's such an interesting way to look at like trauma in general. Like, yeah, we're not in that anymore, but like that is trauma does alter your brain in so many ways that you're now like a different. You're now different. You know what I mean? So yeah, I thought that was just a different or an interesting way to think about war. And yeah, I'll tell you guys so that you're not scared, the horse lives. You're welcome. So yeah, overall I really liked this book. Oh, also I should say probably like a huge theme within this book is a woman scorned. We love that. So, yeah, that's what I gotta say about that.
Glad you told us that because I get really traumatized if the horse would die. What's that movie? I think it might be Never Ending Story, and the horse gets like stuck in the quicksand.
Yes, stop.
No, I can't even deal with that.
I saw that movie once and never again,
Me
specifically because of
too.
that part.
Me too, dude. We live the same life.
Except
Like,
I was playing with moths.
yeah, I was not playing with moths. No, I was like, Mom, I'm never watching that movie again. I know it's like a classic white girl thing to be like, I don't like when the animal dies, but like I really don't like when the animal dies. Like,
That's a classic white girl thing.
yeah, people are always making fun of white girls for being like they don't care when the people are dying, but they care when the animal dies.
Fair
And I said,
assessment.
I said, listen. It's how I feel. Like, I still get really freaked out by the dog dying in Midnight Mass, when it was poisoned. No.
I'm gonna be honest. I think, like, I'm for the most part, obviously, I don't want to read that. But, like, if I do, I do. But if it's a cat, I will be like devastated.
Peep.
If it's any other animal, I'm like, aw.
You just can't have it be Peep.
But if it's a cat, oh, no.
That's your Peep.
Cats are like weirdly flexible, but also delicate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know
Like,
some. Sorry, say finish what you were gonna say.
when I think of a dog's skull, it feels much hardier than a cat's skull.
Yes. Definitely. I feel like they kill cats less often in things.
Probably true.
Because don't you feel like cats are better at escaping?
Depends on the cat.
Not Peep. No, Peep could
Yeah.
make it out.
I feel like maybe more cats die in real life than dogs.
Oh, 100%.
People be sacrificing them.
Yeah, that's true.
But
Yeah.
like in Midnight Mass, when they all wash up on the beach,
Yeah.
don't like that. Why did they do that?
And also, I don't know about like if this has anything to do with it, but this has not has to do with cats, but like sometimes the bigger the animal, the more it freaks me out. And I think that's why Never Ending Story scared me so bad, because like it's such a giant animal in distress. Whereas like if it's a little animal in distress, you're like, oh, okay. But if it's like a giant animal, like bigger than a person, you're like, what the hell?
Right, if it's little, it feels vulnerable and defenseless. Whereas a big animal, you're like, no way.
You're like, that shouldn't be happening. But the horse lives.
The horse does live.
Thank God.
And you know what? It's a good horse.
There's always a good horse.
He's a good horse. I wish I remembered his name right now.
What's his?
What a silly name. Hob. His name's Hob.
Hob?
Yeah.
That's a good name for a horse.
It is a good name for a horse.
I like him.
Slay.
Slay. Thank you, T. Kingfisher, for eating once again. Every time, no crumbs.
No crumbs.
No crumbs. I read Where I End by Sophie White, which is an Irish book. And I think it's cool that we landed on the fact that Gothic equals a desolate setting, because clearly Marissa's book had a very desolate setting, and then this book has a super desolate setting. It takes place on like a remote island off the coast of Ireland. You're not quite sure what time period it is. It seems like it could be like in the 20th century sometime. But it's not very specific. But it's like a very dark, wet, desolate, unwelcoming, rugged sort of landscape that we're presented with here. And it's basically about this girl, Elin, who lives on the island with her grandmother and her mother, who is like physically and mentally disabled. Like she's kind of completely incapacitated. And you're not really entirely sure why. For the bulk of the book, it's like this looming, a part of the thing that's haunting the narrative is, how did the mother end up this way? But Elin's a very straight, the main character is a very strange girl, and her grandma is not very nice. And then, of course, we have the mother, and Elin, a large plot of the book is how she sort of resents her mother for being in this state. And she sort of refers to her mother as a non-person. So I'll just read you the first part to give you a like what I mean when I say that. So she says, "My mother. At night, my mother creaks. The house creaks along with her. Through our thin shared wall, I can hear the makings of my mother gurgle through her body, just like the water in the walls of my house. I hate the sound. In the daytime, it is covered, wrapped up in the radio and the wind and the low hum of electricity. But at night, in the silence, her insides gush, and she seems alive in a way that during daylight she does not. The gush forces thoughts of her effluent, her needs, of the things my grandmother takes care of, but that I will have to do someday soon. I don't want to, which makes me feel bad. I hate her body. It's an awful thing." And she sort of goes on throughout the rest of the book to describe her mother sort of as a thing, the bed thing she often calls her mother. And the descriptions of the mother are insane, like of her, she's obviously has like bed sores, and like she can't really move on her own, she can't feed herself, she can't speak. She only has these eyes that can sort of move, or her mouth can be sort of agape in like a corpse-like way. And the thing that disturbed me the most is that like her fingers are starting to erode. So there's bones coming out of her fingers. And Elin describes one of her fingers as like the tooth, that like the bone looks like a tooth coming out of the finger. It's so scary. But the major sort of turning point, I suppose, of the book is this woman named Rachel. She is an artist, and she comes to the island for a sort of like artist residency, and she has a little baby with her. And Elin just becomes absolutely obsessed with Rachel and sort of jealous of the baby. And the plot of the rest of the book is like Elin trying to remove herself from her grandmother and her mother and sort of latch herself on to Rachel. And that's the plot of the book. For readability, I gave this book a 8. This is the first book I've read in a while where like I really was having trouble putting it down. Like I would read a few chapters and be like, it's time to go to bed, but then I'd be like, I need to know what's going on. It was super bingeable in that way. And I think that's just kind of really fun to run into every once in a while. I'm not the type of person that needs that in every single book. Like I am the type of person that can kind of just like sit with a book for a while and be okay with that and take my time. But I was happy to have this sort of really, I guess, exciting read. And it was exciting not because action was happening, because it is kind of a very dreary, like melancholy book, like Marissa was talking about, but like it's just so bizarre that you're like, what could possibly be happening next? And like the more uncomfortable you are, the more you kind of want to read. For language and style, I gave this a 9. As you can see from the section I read, the language in this book is really good. I'll get into this more with like characterization, but I think part of it is that Elin is just such a freak, and her word choice is just kind of scary in a really cool way. So the way she describes things and the way she sees the world is really haunting. And I think Sophie White did a really good job at capturing that, and really kind of mastered the language in that sense. The other cool thing, which kind of plays into form a little bit as well, but I'll keep it with language, is like there is a lot of Irish in the book. And they don't really bother telling you what the Irish means, which I also like, because that means, an Irish person can read this book and they'll fully understand everything. But like it was kind of cool to have these sections that had like little tiny bits of Irish, and you're like, I don't know what's going on. Like it adds to the sort of like haunting nature of it in an interesting way, and the sort of like mystery of it, which I think was cool. So for form, I gave the book also. So yeah, what did I say? Yeah, language style, I gave a 9. For form, I gave an 8. So it had that interesting thing kind of going on with the Irish aspect of it, but she also just was kind of doing something weird throughout. Like she was doing weird line breaks. She was doing weird space breaks. And like, you guys won't be able to see this, but like Marissa can. Like it'll be like a word on its own line, and then a bunch of spaces, and then a few more words, and then a new paragraph. Or often, Elin's kind of having like everything is in Elin's head. Everything you're reading is in Elin's head, but then she almost has these weird asides where it's like even more in her head. So it'll be like these lines that are in like parentheses, as if she's sort of like breaking the fourth wall, even though she's talking to you the whole time. And that is super weird. And then there's another part that I really thought was cool where you learn that the mom has somehow been able to be writing, and she obviously can't move much, so the writing is not super legible. But there's this one part where Elin's trying to decipher what it says, and it's like a weird chunk of, like, it's almost like a picture White actually puts into the text. I'm gonna see if I can find it. There's also sometimes where it's like everything's italicized and you're like, I don't really know why, but I think it's cool. But this idea of putting image into text is something that I really like when people do. And it's something Lil Miss Marissa does quite a lot with her writing. So whenever I come across it, it pleases me. But I actually think Marissa would really like this book, and it reminded me of Marissa in a lot of ways. But this is like it's like you're trying to figure out what the mother wrote in the same way Elin's trying to figure out what the mother wrote. So it's kind of like an image in handwriting. So it's still words, but it adds something to sort of like really set you in the scene even more. So really cool form, really cool form going on. Four, shelfworthiness. I gave this an 8. I really enjoyed reading this book, and I'm definitely going to hang on to it. I don't know if I would revisit it, but some parts of it were so disturbing that I almost kind of do want to revisit it and be like, what the hell was she up to when she did that? I think sometimes you read a really disturbing book and you're like, I never want to touch that again. That was, I didn't like, it doesn't even mean you didn't like the book. It's just like, you're like, okay, I liked the book. It freaked me out. I don't need to return. But this one, I can definitely see myself never being like, I don't need to read that again. But I can also see myself being like, you remember when you read that book and it said this and it was so freaky and kind of going back and looking at it for that reason. But it's definitely a shelf-worthy read, and it's definitely something that if you can find it, I would recommend picking it up. I don't know how widely circulated it was in the US. That'd be kind of interesting to figure out. It's clearly a Irish printing press that did this one. But she has other books that are Hatchet. So it's possible that you might be able to get your hands on Where I End. She actually has three other fiction books and then two nonfiction books. One of the nonfiction books I really want to read is called Corpsing, My Body and Other Horror Shows. And I said, very good. But this book's not super old. It's from 2022. So you should be able to find it. For plot, I gave this book a 9. It was so weird. I thought it was so clever. I love a book about a woman being obsessed with something. It's something that I think it we see it happen again and again, but it's never quite done the same. Even if you look back at other books Marissa and I read for the podcast, like a lot of the books we read have to do with a woman kind of being obsessed or like fixated on something. Like for some reason, the thing that's popping into my head now is Bunny by Mona Awad. But there's just something about a little unhinged lady doing something nuts that we love. And you're freaked out for a major honestly the entirety of the book. It's just so eerie. I think between her sort of disdain for her mother and then her obsession and love and fetishization of Rachel, and then your worry that she's going to do something awful to the baby, you're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, you're like, I need to know what's tea. And to make matters worse, everybody on the island sort of steers clear of Elin because they kind of think she's like cursed in a way. And that like reveals itself to you later, but she kind of has this almost like town witch vibe to her. Oh, the other thing is like none of the people on the island know the mother is alive. So they've kept that a secret because they don't want people to know that like the mother is like a vegetable inside the house. So everybody just thinks it's Elin and her grandmother. So that's another kind of creepy thing. But the island sort of has its own lore. That's you're kind of like, I would read several many more books that took place on this island because this isn't a spoiler. I'll just tell you one weird thing about the island is that like they don't bury their dead because I think maybe it's like the ground is made of rock, so you can't really like bury people. So instead, they hang the corpses off of the cliff at the back of the island and let the ocean, the waves coming up, like eat away at the corpse. And so there's like a special graveyard rope is, and that's what they sort of dangle people, dead people off the side with. And I was like, girl, what the hell? Also, it's interesting because you only ever you meet Rachel, Seamus, the baby, the grandmother, the mother, Elin, and then Elin's father. You never meet any of the townsfolk. They're always just sort of in the background, like, which I think is kind of cool. And I guess that plays into characterization. But the reason I brought that up is I do think there was a surprising trigger for sexual assault that I didn't see coming. And it's described in such a way that it is pretty uncomfortable, but it's like it's not actively happening. It's sort of in memory, but almost in memory that the character doesn't really even want to fully touch, if that makes sense. Like, and that's why I think it was so jarring to me that you didn't see it coming, because it's almost like, and this happened, and then you're talking about something else, and you're like, wait, what? Like, I almost thought I read it wrong. And I was like, wait, what? And then it came up again one other time. And I was like, what the shit? And it was very upsetting, but like, really, I think well done. And I guess that sort of plays into my last bit, which is characterization, which I gave a 9. None of these characters, except for Rachel, the artist, are likable. They are all so scary and so uncomfortable, but you can totally, wholeheartedly understand why they are the way that they are. And I feel like that's often the key thing that Marissa and I are looking for when we're reading these books. Like, I always grapple with this when I come to characterization, because I'll be sitting there and I'm like, I didn't really like these people. But then I read the sort of parameters for what qualifies as good characterization that we came up with, and Marissa came up with for a 9/10. I'm invested in these characters. I can relate and or understand them. It was present and carried throughout. And that's the key. You never have to actually be like su supporting the protagonist of the book. They could be a figure that you're just completely and utterly nearly disgusted by. But as long as you understand why they are the way that they are, and as long as the character like is written well and has an interesting arc throughout the book, that's what good characterization is. And it's weird because it's one of those things that you don't really support a lot of these characters, but you still get a really satisfying ending, and you're like, you kind of feel like, I don't know if vindicated is like the right term, but like you're kind of with them in the sense that you're like, everybody got what, like, it, I don't want to spoil it, but it's just really interesting. It didn't actually end the way I thought it was going to end at all. So that's just always fun too, a nice plot twist. And then of course, when you finally figure out how the mother became the way that she is and why she is the way that she is, that's super disturbing as well, and it makes you be like, ugh, like it makes everything worse. I just love when by the end of the book you're like, everything is just worse, but also better. It's so weird. It was just a really cool book, and very gothic in the sense that there's several things haunting the narrative here, and none of it's paranormal. It's all man-made horror, which is kind of my favorite thing. And it in the and you almost start to feel like you're kind of developing a psychosis as you're reading the book, which I love to see that. Yeah, so that is Where I End by Sophie White.
Yay! Snaps for
She
Sophie. Yeah,
slayed.
that sounds really good.
You would really like it. Like, I like, if it's not available in the US, I would honestly send it to you. But like, it would be a cool thing to have in your horror section at work if you can get a hold of it.
It sounds familiar, but I know we don't have it in store.
Yeah.
At least not in horror, we don't. But it sounds so familiar.
I'm trying to see if I've ever. And yeah, and I just found it in like a used bookstore, you know, like.
Ooh, look at this cover.
Ooh, that's the rope I was telling you about that they
Yeah.
hang over the side with,
Which is cool.
which is so cool. Oh, it's got like three different kind of cool colors. I mean, covers going on. And I think Sophie White has a podcast, so I'm gonna look into what the tea is there. Because I love that
She's
little freak.
beautiful.
I
Yeah,
love
she's
whatever she's up
pretty.
to.
pretty. She looks like
What?
she could be one of Zoe's doppelgangers.
Definitely. Definitely. Ooh. My legs.
This was the hard cover.
Ooh.
That one's cool.
That one's really
That one's
cool.
really cool.
I like it.
Anyways, good for you, Sophie.
Sophie, you slayed the house down, I fear.
And she won the Shirley Jackson Award for Best Novel for that one.
And she deserved it, and Shirley Jackson would love it.
It reminded me a little bit of We've Always Lived in the Castle.
Definitely. It definitely. The main character, Elin, kind of reminds me of Mary Kat. Ooh, we love a little unhinged lady.
And you have what was his name? Uncle whatever.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
I wouldn't mind the ocean eating me away when I die.
No, me either. Yeah, that doesn't, I kind of like that.
Feel like we read some good books.
I love this week. What a good, we did a good one
We
for sure.
love Gothic.
It's one of my favorite things ever.
Yes, it is.
What are we reading next week?
Next week, we're reading cereal books.
Cereal. Books about cereal. What's your favorite cereal?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and it's the best cereal.
I was going to say Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Okay, good. Because
It's
there's
the
no
best
other
cereal.
answer.
No. If you give me another answer, I'm going to be like, what do you mean? Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
It's the best.
What are you reading for your cereal book?
I'm reading Along the River of Flesh by Christopher Triano, which is the second to, Gone to See the River Man.
And I'm reading Notes on an Execution by, I'm so sorry, butchered this name, Danya Kukovka? Danya Kukovka.
Cool.
And I'm looking forward to it. I've heard really good things about this book, so.
It's gonna be fun.
So we'll see you guys then.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace out. Oh, wait, it's me.
Oh yeah, I forgot it was you.
That's how it goes.
That's the song.
That's the song. That's how it goes.